From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad to be joined by phone by Father Radmar Howe, who is the director of the Western Province of the Jesuits, Vocations Director. And we appreciate you joining us by phone. Father, good day to you.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Where are you located?
Los Angeles.
Oh, in Los Angeles. Okay. And what does the Western Province encompass?
Alaska, all of the western side of the United States. So from Alaska down to San Diego, and as far east as like Montana, Nevada, Utah, Arizona.
Is Hawaii in there too?
And Hawaii too, yes. Although we don't have anything in Hawaii. We don't have any works in Hawaii, but Hawaii is part of our region, our territory. Yeah.
So how many provinces are there, say, in the United States?
There are 4 provinces in the United States right now. When I entered 20 years ago, there were 10, and we've consolidated down to 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you have a minute, I'd love to hear your vocation story. How you became a Catholic priest.
Sure. Well, I'm a cradle Catholic, born and raised Catholic. I'm originally from Valparaiso, Indiana, actually. I was born and raised in Indiana. And Filipino-American family. And when I moved to Los Angeles after graduating college, I got involved with a church out here in the choir with this one church in North Hollywood, California. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was the home parish of the cardinal at the time. I was singing in that parish, and one of the associate pastors invited me to go to a come and see retreat at the seminary in Camarillo, California.
Okay.
And at the time,
is that St. John's?
No desire. St. John's, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, St. John's. And I didn't want to go, but he said, well, just go and accompany this guy who is thinking of going. You don't have to sign anything. You're not signing your life away. Just go. So I went, and it was a weekend come and see. And I left there thinking, well, I don't not want to become a priest, but this just doesn't feel right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there you go, Lord. I checked this out. It wasn't for me. Thank you very much. Leave me alone. Kind of
right,
thing, you know?
Right.
And, but soon after that, this is like in the mid-90s, right? And so soon after that, it felt like every Sunday was Vocation Sunday. It felt like every homily, the priest was talking to me. Mm-hmm. Every time they sang, "Here I am, Lord," I would start tearing up and crying.
Oh, wow.
And being not afraid. All these different, like, signs.
Yes.
I thought to myself, all right, Lord, if this is really what you're doing here, if you really want me to become a priest, then give me this, give me that, give me the other thing. I started asking for things and bargaining with God.
Right.
And as we know, one should never bargain with God because you will always lose.
Yeah.
In a sense of, you know, I asked for these things. Well, you know, he gave me the things I asked for. At the time, I was an actor, actually. I was an actor in Los Angeles, working in Hollywood, working professionally. And I asked for, you know, this audition, help me get this job, and help me pay my rent. And I would get those things. But I always chalked it up to coincidence.
Sure.
I'm like, yeah. So then I kept doing it. I kept playing those games with God. God kept answering my prayers. Until finally I'm like, all right, let me test this out even more. All right, Lord, if you really, really want me to become a Jesuit, or become a priest, rather, take away these things. I decided to change my tactic.
Wow.
And sure enough, I know, it was kind of risky.
That's brave.
Sure enough, things started to tank. My career was going down the tubes. Right when I thought I hit the, you know, pinnacle of my career, acting career, I was having a difficult time paying my rent. Relationships were ending. All these things were, like, going down the tube. And I thought, oh, my gosh, maybe this is it. I should probably answer this call. And so I told a friend of mine, we were doing a play in Sacramento, and explained to him what was going on in my life. And I said, yeah, I'm thinking of giving all this up because of these, quote-unquote, signs that I'm getting. And he said, oh, man, don't do it. Don't do it. But if you really have to, check out the Jesuits, because you can be a priest and an actor at the same time. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, and so he went to a Jesuit high school here in Los Angeles, and he explained to me what he understood of Jesuit spirituality and why he said you can be a priest and an actor. And I'm like, this is fascinating. All I knew at the time was diocesan priesthood. I had no idea what religious priesthood was.
Right.
And I found a come and see for the Jesuits, and I went to that come and see. I asked that question, is it true I can be a priest and an actor? And I'm like, yeah, but why don't we focus on whether or not God is calling you first, rather than, you know, looking ahead and seeing if you can be a priest and an actor at the same time. And so I started discerning with the Jesuits. I went to this come and see. I was one of the last people to leave the come and see. And as I left, I felt, all right, God, you got me. There was something about it that just kind of felt right. And when I said, all right, Lord, I'm going to pursue this, I'm going to check this out and discern for a year, the disquiet, the uncertainty, the anxiety, all just kind of settled.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about this in spiritual direction for the next year. And then I went on a discernment retreat at the very high school that my friend went to school at here in Los Angeles, Loyola High School.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that retreat that I had this profound experience of Jesus falling in love with me and me falling in love with Jesus, such that I couldn't deny that there was something here, that there was this desire that Christ had for me to be part of, you know, sort of like his soldier, if you will. And so I decided to sign the papers and start the application and was accepted. And I entered in August of 2001. And I've been in for 20 years this year, actually.
Wow, the Society of Jesus.
The Society of Jesus, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So, we do have that famous Catholic school in Indiana, not Jesuit school. Is that where you went to college?
No, I did not. I went to the state school.
Where'd you go?
I went to Indiana University. Indiana.
Yes.
So, farthest you can get from any Catholic, from a Catholic school.
Is that the Sycamores?
Pardon me.
Is that the Sycamores? The mascot.
The mascot's the Hoosiers.
Oh,
don't ask me what a Hoosier is, please.
Oh, I thought that was. Oh, I thought you said Indiana State.
No, Indiana University.
In Bloomington.
Yeah, in Bloomington.
Oh, yeah. They're the Hoosiers. Yeah, I thought. My mistake. Yeah.
Bobby Knight. I was there.
Bobby Knight. That's a great academic school, but it's also obviously known for its basketball.
Absolutely. I was there for the last time that IU won the state championships. NCAA championships.
Yeah. Did you ever get hit when he threw a chair?
No. I was there though when that happened. I was there.
Yeah. quite the character, but
yes,
a great coach. Great coach. Wow. So, explain the difference between the path, once you made the choice to join the Jesuits, between that and, say, becoming a diocesan priest?
Well, you know, for the diocesan priest, you're bound by your diocese, right? You're going to serve. When you ask for the path, are you talking about the formation path?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for the Jesuits, it's very different. For us, it's a 10 to 12 year process because we don't go to seminary per se. So the diocesans, you're in seminary, you're in one place for 6 to 7 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Studying philosophy and theology. Now, we study philosophy and theology as well, but we have two stages of formation that the diocesan guys don't have. The first stage is novitiate.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 years. It's called, you're a novice, you're a beginner. So the novitiate is where you learn to live, work, and pray as a Jesuit. And you go through the 30-day retreat, the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the main purpose, is to sort of experience these exercises and encounter the risen Lord in a very personal and very real way.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all, our order is named after him, and so you should have a relationship with Christ in a way that is very deep and profound and solid. And so these spiritual exercises does that. So there's the 2 years of novitiate, then we take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, which the diocesan guys don't do. They don't take vows. They make promises of poverty and chastity, obedience and chastity, but they don't take a vow of poverty. They do take a they promise to live simply, but mm-hmm. they don't take a vow.
Right.
And so we take those vows, and then we move to the next stage, which is philosophy studies. We call it first studies. Mm-hmm. And here in the United States and Canada, you have the option of going to school at Loyola University of Chicago, St. Louis University, or Fordham University in New York. And then after philosophy, which is very similar to the diocesan model, because we have to abide by the canonical rules and requirements, I should say, for priestly formation. So the philosophy classes that we take are very similar to the kinds of philosophy classes that diocesans take. But we take at these universities versus at one seminary.
So if you went to, say, Fordham, mm-hmm. you'd be in New York City. How long would that be? And would you be in residence with the Jesuits, or be you living on campus? Or
No, you live with the Jesuits. There's a Jesuit community there at Fordham, mm-hmm. a scholastic community. So you live with other guys who are studying philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it's a three to four-year program, depending on how deep of a dive of philosophy you want to make, right?
Right.
Because the basic canonical requirements are, you know, like a certain amount of credits. And then if you want to go for the degree, which is like another 8 units, then you stay for an extra year. You go for the degree mm-hmm. or even go for a doctorate degree if you want to go even further into your philosophy studies. So it depends on the man's desires and whether or not the province, their home province, wants them to go into further studies with a doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
So then after the philosophy studies, we have what's called regency, where it's a 3 to 4 year period of time where you teach. So, you know, the Society of Jesus, we're known for our schools and our academics. And so every Jesuit is formed to teach. And so this really gives us an opportunity to learn what it's like to be in front of people and to educate. And so you have the opportunity to teach at a high school or a university. Some guys, however, who don't feel called to the academic apostolate or the intellectual apostolate, some of them will go into retreat ministry or do some parish work or do a combination of both. After which, then we go back to school for theology. And then for us here in the U.S. and Canada, it's the Jesuit School of Theology in Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
or Boston College School of Theology and Ministry, or Regis University in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
Those three are the options that we can go mm-hmm. for theology. Many guys who, again, want to go even further, they can study in Rome, they can study in other parts of the world if they feel like they... their proclivities are leading them towards more advanced studies. It's like, you know, they're going to teach Bible study, or not Bible study, teach the Bible or Scripture, or mm-hmm. go for their licentiate in sacred theology. If they want to go to the further degree, then they have the option of going, like, to Rome or to Ireland or to Columbia or
mm-hmm.
other theologians. And then after that is ordination, if that's your track, because we also have brothers in the order. Guys who are called to be Jesuits and to serve as Jesuits, but not in the sacramental way like a priest does. Mm-hmm. So their formation is a little bit different than the priestly formation. Mm-hmm. So it's about 10 to 12 years, depending on the man's desires.
And then you are assigned to an occupation, for want of a better word?
We're missioned to a particular work. Mm-hmm. So we are a missionary order, fundamentally.
Right.
So we're missioned for specific work. Like, for example, right now I'm missioned to be the director of vocations.
Right.
Prior to this, I was missioned to campus ministry at Boise State University.
Oh, wow.
We have the Newman Center up there, or the Catholic Student Center, I should say. So you're missioned to specific works, but you're formed during that formation period before ordination, you're formed towards a specific work. So if you feel like God calling you to the intellectual apostolate, then your formation will lead you to further studies in your doctorate mm-hmm. in a doctorate program or something like that. That was not me. My gifts laid in, more in campus ministry, young adult ministry, the spiritual ministry, the spiritual exercises, for example. And so my training kind of led me there, which then gave me the opportunity to do what I'm doing now, which is accompanying men who are interested in becoming Jesuits.
Is this something you could have imagined yourself doing when you decided to become a Jesuit?
Be the director of vocations?
Yeah.
Not at all.
Not at all.
not at all. Which is, you know, in ways, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing and a grace thing that that this is all God's doing. And there's a certain freedom to that, right? Where I was asked to do this job, and I, after a period of prayer and discernment, I'm like, all right, yes, I'll do it. And I have to tell you, even though I started last year during most, you know, when COVID just started, so there's a lot of, there was all the lockdowns and inability to see people in person, it was a really tough year to do this job and to do this mission.
I would think.
Because you, pardon me?
I would think so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now here we go in the second year, it's a little bit more open, although things are starting to shut down again because of Delta, but the opportunities are much greater, and I feel like more and more guys have had this year of, I don't want to say year of reckoning, but they've had the opportunity to say, you know what, I want to do something with my life. Mm-hmm. And more guys seem to be having this sort of a come to Jesus moment and saying, okay, maybe I'm being called to something greater than what I'm doing now. So hopefully we're in that right place at the right time that they see us and say, hey, maybe it's the Jesuits. And so, you know, because we're competing, quote-unquote, competing with other orders and diocesan. So everybody's, you know, reaching out to these guys who are, you know, interested in joining or interested in serving Christ in some way as a priest or as a brother. So.
And here I thought the Jesuits were all about basketball.
No, that's Gonzaga.
So if Gonzaga plays Indiana, who do you root for?
Oh, no, Bob. I don't know if I can answer that question.
Yeah, that's a tough one, huh?
That would be tough. I'll play it safe. Whoever's winning at the time, I'll just jump on that.
Yeah. And then, of course, the name itself, Loyola, has become a power again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and actually won a national championship in 1963, you know, and Sister Jean and all of it. You know,
she's become
an international celebrity.
Yeah, she just turned 102.
Is that right?
They just celebrated her birthday, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I went to Loyola Chicago, and I met her, almost 20 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
She was a powerhouse then.
Yes.
You know? Have you ever met her?
I have not met her in person, no.
Okay.
I would love to.
Yeah.
So you're coming, you're going to be one of the keynote speakers at On Fire. Have you been to On Fire before?
I have not. I'm really fascinated to see what this is all about. Young people at an amusement park. I'm a little skeptical. Will they actually be listening? Or are they just looking forward to riding rides?
Yeah.
The cynical part of me.
I think you're actually going to be preaching on the roller coaster.
You know what? I would do that. I would be up for that. That would be fascinating.
I think
that would keep me on the roller coaster for 15 minutes at least, or at least 10.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of prayer going on in roller coasters.
Right? But hey, you can imagine sort of the metaphor of roller coasters, life going up and down.
Yeah.
You know, God can keep the track straight in your life, so to speak, right?
Yeah. So do you speak to a lot of youth groups?
I have. Like when I was in Boise, I did. I did a lot of youth programs, spoke at youth programs at fair and youth rallies, things like that. But my wheelhouse really is young adults. So those in their 20s and 30s, post-college, really.
Mm-hmm.
So youth groups, a few. But, you know, I think the message is the same. Not only about God's love and God's mercy, but that you are enough. Ultimately, you are enough. No matter what anybody says to you, right? We live in a society today, especially with young people, where, you know, TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and all these different things where, you know, their identity is being called into question and it's being, their identity is being placed online, right?
Yes.
For all the world to see. And if they're not, their sense of worth and value is measured by the number of likes and followers you have. What a sad, sad sort of
thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, gee, I posted something so good and I only had 11 likes. Yeah, it's like it's like your identity is based on these things that are so artificial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. and it's not just the young people. It's everyone who's got an Instagram or an account that's on TikTok or whatever, you know? Right. These quote-unquote influencers. I always find it an interesting phrase, right? You know, to be an influencer.
An influencer, yeah.
You know, what is it that you're influencing?
Yeah. Boy, Father, I can tell you that if I had been assigned to Boise State, I would hate to leave.
Why do you say that?
That's a beautiful city.
You know what? I agree.
Yeah.
I was so reluctant to go because, you know, even though I grew up in Indiana, I consider myself a California boy now. Mm-hmm. I've been out west here,
right.
Gosh, more than half of my life. And so I'm like, why would, you know, I really balked when my provincial said, I want you to go to Boise. I'm like, excuse me, what? Where is that? You know? I thought it was this hick town and whatnot, and no, it's actually a beautiful, beautiful city.
Yeah.
I have very many friends there. In fact, I'll be celebrating a wedding there in a couple of weeks of former students of mine.
Wonderful. You know, and they teach you very quickly that it's not Boise, it's Boise.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. How do you know this? Have you spent time up there?
I met my wife in Idaho.
Get out.
Not in Boise. Uh-huh. Actually, at a place you won't believe the name of this. It's Priest Lake.
Absolutely. Up north.
Up north. Yeah. Yeah, almost in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know why it's called Priest Lake?
No. You know, I really don't know.
Because of the Jesuits.
Well, the Jesuits had, I know, had a retreat there. It was called Linger Longer.
Yeah. So the former Oregon province Jesuits, When the Jesuits came out west, they settled in that northwest region first before coming down to California.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were like the Smet and Cataldo. Cataldo was the other one.
Right.
These Italian, I think they were Italian. Well, the Smet was Dutch. But anyway, these European Jesuits who came out west from New York, I believe, settled in that area. And that's why they call it Priest Lake.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of the history of that area, but I didn't know that. And I tell people it's a big lake. You hear about Coeur d'Alene a lot, and
yeah.
But Priest Lake is God's country. It's just beautiful and pristine.
Well, I got to tell you, all of Idaho is God's country. That is
indeed.
A beautiful, beautiful state.
Indeed, and you know our Bishop Emeritus here, Bishop Wiegand, is a native of Idaho, and. Was incarnated in the Diocese of Boise originally.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I joke with him. He grew up in a little town in Idaho called St. Mary's, and it was at the confluence of the St. Mary's and the St. Joe's rivers. So he was destined.
The confluence of Mary and Joseph. That's great.
Yeah. So, awesome. Indeed. Well. So, youth, it's so different now with youth, and this, you know, it's going to be a live event, and praise the Lord that we're going to be able to hold it. It looks like.
Yeah.
What message? I mean, trying to reach today's. I've got four teenagers, and you know, they're great kids, and they're gifts from God, but. You know, they all have minds of their own,
right?
And I'd be real pleased if they considered the priesthood or three of them are girls, a vocation in the religious life. I'd be really pleased.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's unusual that a parent would want that for their children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I get it. Right? There's a lot of sacrifice to. Life as a religious,
right.
But it's also a very viable life, and it's a joyful life,
yep.
And it's a life filled with joy, really. At least it has the potential of that. And so I'm, you know, good for you that you're open to that for your own children, and hopefully you let them know that, give that to them as an option anyway. That, you know, if that's what you want, great.
Yeah, you know, you're sitting around the dinner table, and if somebody's, in fact, they just had the diocesan vocations dinner last month, and it's always a big event, and I go every year, and one of my daughters always comes to it. She's going to be a college freshman now, and she wants the calendar. You know, when's the vocations dinner? When's the Bishop Gallegos maternity home dinner? When's the
Wow.
And she wants to go to those things. You know, and
nice.
Yeah, and so and it's always great to see them, to have an open mind about those things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I once was when I was first ordained. I was celebrating Mass at a parish in San Jose, our Jesuit parish in San Jose, Most Holy Trinity. And I was celebrating Mass for the Filipino community, you know. And many of them came up to me afterwards after my first Mass. I'm like, oh, Father, it's so great to see a Filipino priest. We need more Filipino priests.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yes, we do. What about your son?
Yes,
and your
nephew?
And it's like... No. We want grandchildren. We want, you know.
All right,
and I'm
right.
like, well, where do you expect these priests to come from?
Exactly.
They come from your families, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that, you know, the Diocese of Sacramento has a number of great Filipino priests.
Yeah.
We really do. My pastor at my parish in Davis is a Filipino American.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we have a real active Filipino community here in the Diocese of Sacramento and all over Northern California, really, for sure. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you on the 18th of September, and I know you're going to ride. You're going to try all the rides.
Is that a dare, Bob?
That it was sort of a dare. It was sort of a dare. Yeah, it's a double dare, I think.
Oh! Are you going to be there?
I have a conflict, so I'm trying to work it out.
Yeah. Oh, I see how it is. I'm planning on riding at least. I love roller coasters.
Oh, good. Good.
And it's been a while since I've been in an amusement park, so who knows if I still have the temperament for it? If my body, as I get older, has a temperament for it. But I love roller coasters, so yes, I'll be riding as many as I can.
Yeah, my kids have given up on trying to get me onto roller coasters. I was telling somebody else that even a merry-go-round now I get a little dizzy, you know.
Yeah. That's funny. Things that go around like that, like merry-go-rounds, I can't do because I get dizzy. But roller coasters, no problem.
You're a brave man, Father. You're a brave man.
Well, I trust in Jesus. There we go.
There you go. Absolutely, yeah. Father. It is a joy to talk with you. Thanks for all you do to spread the good word and the good news. And I'm glad you made that decision to become a Jesuit because you're doing a lot of good work.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you, Bob.
Good. I hope our paths cross again soon. Maybe on the 18th, and maybe another time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Father Radmar Ho. Father Radmar Howe, it's spelled J-A-O, but he pronounces it Howe, who will be one of the keynote speakers at On Fire, the NorCal Jam, the annual great big event here in the Diocese of, more than the Diocese of Sacramento, all the Northern California Diocese plus the Diocese of Reno, which kind of our pals. We consider them part of Northern California. Also, Sister Josephine Garrett from Dallas will be there. Joel Melendrez will be the MC, Epic the Band. Just a lot going on. Starts with Mass in the morning. Also, all-you-can-eat lunch. You can do the rides and a lot of inspirational talks as well. And there's more than rides there, too. It is... Six Flags Discovery Kingdom. There's a lot of animals there, too, in Vallejo. Go to onfirenorcal.com, onfirenorcal.com. There's still tickets available for this Saturday, September the 18th, from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. It's right where Interstate 80 and Highway 37 come together there, right as you're coming into the city of Vallejo off of Interstate 80, if you're coming from the Sacramento area or from certainly east of Vallejo. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Moises De Leon from the Office of Family and Respect Life. You're listening to Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunnan.
Thank you, Moises, for that wonderful introduction. I appreciate everybody being with us here on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased and honored to welcome in Rick Maya, a great dad and a former superintendent of schools here at the Diocese of Sacramento. Rick, always good to hear your voice.
Always good to hear you, Bob, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yes, we had your son, Gabe, on the program last week, heading off to the University of San Diego, where, among other things, and I know this is just one slice of his life, but he's going to pitch for the University of San Diego baseball team. Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, this is an exciting time, and I had a chance to listen to his interview, and it's a hard act to follow, so hopefully I won't let you down.
did he take media relations or what? Boy, he's good with behind a microphone.
Well, I think what will happen is, even though he's going to be studying business at the University of San Diego, I suspect he's going to find himself somewhere around either a radio station or a television station. He does a nice job. We're really proud of him.
Oh, you should be. You should be. And of course, a product of our Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento, a graduate of Christian Brothers.
Yeah, and that's you know, it's so fitting to be able to be on a call with you to talk about, you know, not just the journey that he's taken, but, you know, I'll tell you, Bob, getting ready to drop your oldest child off to college, which we're taking him tomorrow. I'll be honest with you, it's been rough. You know, my wife and I are so excited for him, but at the same time, you know, we're just trying to gobble up and absorb as much time as we can with him and his brothers and sisters, because, as you know, things are going to change.
Yep.
But by the grace of God, he'll walk with him every single day, and he'll just do fine down in San Diego.
Yeah, and I'm about to take one of mine, one of the youngest of mine, off to college as well, and boy, it just that hole in the heart, you know. And but it is what you want them to do. And I told her, I said, as long as you go to a school that was named after a Catholic saint, we're fine. And she's going to UC Santa Cruz, so it fits. Sure, it worked. And then I found out that almost every school in California is named after a Catholic saint.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, you know, that I mean, Gabe's fortunate enough to be able to go to a Catholic university, and that was really what was on his mind. You know, going through the whole recruiting process, he had a list of schools. All of them were great schools, some Catholic, some private, some public universities. But his heart from day one was set for the University of San Diego. And we had always talked about, you know, being an athlete, sometimes the school of your choice may not be the school that chooses you.
Right.
But, you know, in the midst of all that went on with COVID over the last couple of years, he put himself in a position through hard work, good grades, going to Christian Brothers to have this opportunity. And so San Diego was the first school to make an official offer. And so typically you're supposed to tell him, hey, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
He accepted it right there on the phone because he just knew it was right. And it was something that we all prayed over as a family. And we knew that God would guide us to the right decision. And it happened on Father's Day 2020.
Oh, that's wonderful.
A better day. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it's hard because it's hard at any age, but especially hard at that age to separate that all. I remember I played on the tennis team in college, and it was really important to me, you know. And fortunately, I was getting good academics at the same time, but at the time, I was more interested in the tennis than the academics, you know.
Sure.
And for, and unfortunately, a lot of kids feel that pressure. Well, I want to go to the University of X because they have a great football team or baseball team or whatever, or whatever it is. And they don't even look at the academics because the athletics has become their life.
Right.
And
right.
There's going to be, you know, as you know, 1/10 of 1 millionth of 1% actually make a professional career out of a sport. It's just the funnel narrows very quickly, and it's great to have that as a dream. It's great to pursue it if you have that ability, and yet it's great to go to a great academic institution and a great religious institution like the University of San Diego.
No question, and that's why, you know, when you stop to think about, you know, if you put yourself in a position to play Division I sports, you know, you always have to ask yourself, is this particular institution one that if baseball were to go away tomorrow due to injury or for whatever reason, is this a place that you want to be from an academic perspective, from a social perspective, from a geographical perspective?
Sure.
You know, do you like the weather? And so, you know, you have to be able to say yes to all of those because you're going to spend the next, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 years at these institutions, and, you know, sports come and go, and you have to take advantage of every moment you have an opportunity to participate, but it does end. And to your point, some, very few go on, but you really have to ask yourself, is this the place that I want to be? And a university like San Diego, I mean, he was able to check off all the boxes, and the number one thing that was most important to him was he wanted to go to a school where he could study, play, party, have fun, in a gospel environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that translates from all of our experiences going through, I mean, a parochial school, going to Catholic high school, and now on to college. And, you know, to be able to be in that environment, it's not to say that in a public university, that it's, you know, just, you know, institutional, but at the same time, you know, God is there no matter where you go to school. He's with our children every day.
Right.
Sometimes you have to go out and find him, but he's there. And whether it's at a Catholic university or a fine public university, you know, we need to make sure that we do our job as parents to make sure that our kids understand that Jesus is with them every single day. He's in the hallways with them. He's at the lunchrooms with them. In Gabe's case, he's on the baseball field with them. And he just has to continue to walk his journey with Christ.
Absolutely. Hopefully he's calling balls and strikes.
Yeah, exactly. The only problem, though, is the West Coast Conference has a lot of Catholic
schools. So. I know. The West Coast Conference is just loaded with Catholic schools. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But he's put himself in a nice position to, you know, to hopefully succeed, most importantly from an academic perspective, but play some baseball along the way as well.
Well, for those that don't know what we're talking about in terms of sports, Rick's son Gabe is playing Division I baseball. That's the highest level of college baseball. And there's Division I, there's Division II, there's Division III. And it's basically based on skill level. You know, they're, every now and then a two or a three comes up with a superstar. But most of the serious baseball players are playing at the Division I level. And many of them, go on to professional baseball, not necessarily the bigs, but go on to professional baseball. And yet, you know, sports are, you know, they're a they can be strange. An injury, you know, things can confidence. There's a lot that goes into sports, as you well know, Rick. And
it fundamentally changes, you know, young men and women. You know, today after our phone call, resumed football practice for my youngest son Vince, and mm-hmm. plays 12-year-old tackle football here in El Dorado Hills for Oak Ridge. And this year, Bob, was interesting, and I think this was a result of COVID, was typically at this level, 7th and 8th grade, before the kids go to high school, you've got maybe a team of 25, 26 athletes, because it mm-hmm. kind of weeds itself out as you move on.
Right.
This year, we had over 45 young athletes
really?
Come out to play tackle football. You know, 25 of them have never put a helmet on before.
That's amazing.
It's just amazing. And to watch these young guys and young men and women train and have the guts to even try a new sport, something like football, it's amazing because it just changes these young folks. They become more disciplined. They become more athletic, obviously, but more confident. We see grades go up in the classroom, not just because of the camaraderie, just because they're able to take on just the physical demands of whatever sport mm-hmm. that it is, and it just transforms. And I've watched some of these kids play since they've been in second grade, and then, you know, our job is to get ready for high school, and hopefully they all go to Christian Brothers and Jesuits.
Right.
So we've got a pretty darn good school here in El Dorado Hills in Oak Ridge. It just changes these young men, and it's just amazing to be able to integrate the discipline of sports, but then how it so much applies in the classroom and even at home and in the community. It's something special.
You know, Rick, I've always felt, I've even written about it, that if all the coaches got together at the start of the year, you know, and said, you know, we know some kids in our student body that are at risk, you know, for any one of a variety of reasons. And a football coach raises his hands and says, I'll take three of them. And a baseball coach says, I'll take two of them. And a basketball coach says, I got room on a roster for one or two of them. And on and on and on. You know, the swim coach, the leader of the marching band, the choir director.
Yeah.
To give those kids something to belong to, beyond the academics of the school, I think you would see a real transformation in a lot of those kids. I'm on a football team. I'm running out on the field on Friday night. You know, I'm on a basketball team. I'm running out there to make layups during the drills, and they're paying the school fight song. And you know, it just that kind of belonging, that kind of having teammates that pick you up. There are a lot of great life lessons there, and so many of these kids miss it, and some of it just lack of a skill level.
Yeah,
I mean, people don't realize how good some of these high school kids are, but can't we find a place for one team for this kid and on one team for that kid? You know, I think it would make a real difference.
Well, absolutely, and it kind of goes back to the no child left behind.
Right, because, right.
Again, when there are kids from an at risk perspective, to think about the importance of one being on a team and being a good teammate. I mean, that's the number one thing that we preach is you've got to be a good teammate.
Right.
And then to know that everyone has a job, and if you do your job and your brother does his job and they do their job, then all of a sudden every play, whatever it is, it's going to be successful. And that's whether it's football, baseball, band, or whatever it is, when you're given that responsibility to carry your weight and to be able to see the outcome, and who cares about the score at the end of the day, but were you able to execute, you know, the X's and O's, if you will, or were you able to hit those notes, you know, on the musical side, it all comes together. And the feeling that I see these kids get when they pull a play off or they score a touchdown against Folsom, who we played this weekend, that's what it's all about. And it goes well beyond just the hard-headed football piece of it. But it forms these young men. And you know, what I'm starting to see a lot, just from all the coaching that I've done, is the really good coaches too, Bob, they somehow integrate God into their philosophy
yep.
and their style. And that's what works, and that's what our society needs so much, especially for our youth that are at risk.
Yeah, amen, amen. You know, my my oldest daughter went to the University of Arizona. She started there, ended up at finishing at UC Davis ultimately, but I remember moving her into her dorm room, And third floor with no elevators, my back has never been the same. And it was like late Saturday afternoon, and kind of hot in Tucson in August. And we saw all these people walking across the quad, you know. It was about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and I said, well, it must be a barbecue going on for the freshmen or something. Let's follow them, you know. And they were going to the Newman Center for Mass.
Wow. And great, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, and so, of course, we went. And I looked up. I did. I looked up, and I said, thank you, God, you know. Yeah. You know, we're in a pack in the car and all this heart-wrenching saying goodbye and all that. It was just so comforting to see that. And, of course, virtually, and I don't know all the stats, but a great percentage of public universities have at least a Newman Center.
Absolutely. And, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
As part of campus life.
And that's the message to the students is it's there, right? You may have to go find it,
yep.
But it's there, right? And to be able to go with your friends, you know, on a Saturday evening or a Sunday, whenever it is, that just helps, I think, not only just in the transition, but also just to continue to grow. And, you know, in college today, they're going to have a lot of things thrown at them, right? A lot of different opinions, yep. A lot of different perspectives, which is fine, and I think, you know, that'll help them grow. But to be able to gravitate back towards your roots and your foundation from a faith perspective, you know, it'll give them the courage to put, you know, some of these things into perspective and to challenge at times respectfully, but then to also just kind of become more of a thinker, right? Because,
right.
Again, in society today, these kids are getting hit with stuff from all different directions, but that foundation is there, and that's really, you know, what we're looking forward to, you know, for Gabe going down to San Diego.
Yeah, you know, there's a verse in the Bible, and I can't quote it well, but it's basically it talks about, when your kids are young, you know, teach them well. Teach them about God. Teach them all these things, and they will come back to it. They, you know, it will, you know, and I've seen it over and over again with family members, even, you know, that you may have drifted away, and back they come. You know, they gravitate back. So how do you, you know, there's so many options out there. When you're obviously, it's a little different with Gabe because he was such a great pitcher, an athlete. How do you go about sorting that out and really finding, you know, the right college option for a kid? And when does it start? You know, we every time we go on vacation, we try to go through the college towns and stop and, you know, go in the bookstore and walk around and you know, and get a feel for the place. How do you do that as a dad, as a parent?
You know, what's interesting is, you know, especially during these last, you know, year and a half, all the, you know, situations with COVID, it was hard to visit as many campuses. But I think, Bob, honestly, like most things, it starts at the dinner table.
Yep.
And just the discussions that you have, and, you know, you don't have to hammer it on the kids, but they know and understand what's on the line. And, you know, mom and dad sacrifice to put our kids in the best position for them to be successful. But, you know, what's great is, and a lot of the high schools do this, is, you know, they start to, you know, college is not just a dream. It's an expectation now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, Gabe, we were looking at colleges, you know, freshman, sophomore year.
Right.
And did a lot of visits. To your point, every time we went on vacation, we'd swing by a different university and go to the bookstore, buy stuff, take tours.
Right.
And actually, we just got back from Hawaii 2 weeks ago. And we went to visit the University of Hawaii.
Right.
You know, obviously Gabe couldn't buy any of their merchandise, but the other kids were able to do that. You know, Ricky, Vince, and Katie.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that type of exposure, those discussions. You know, you also have to, and baseball has been able to do this for us because we've traveled so much over the years, is go out and, you know, go check out different parts of the country.
Yep.
You know, we've taken our boys to baseball events, you know, in Texas and in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some East Coast stuff. We were at Cooperstown with my youngest son over the summer. And I think just exposures to different parts of the country, you know, when you can integrate sports, if that's their hobby, it makes it even that much more interesting.
Yep.
But just having that feeling, you know, and just kind of that it's there, it's going to take a lot of work. And is this a part of the country that you want to be in? You know, in Tulsa in August is very different than Tulsa in March. And so just trying to give them as much exposure as you can early and often with the reinforcement around the importance of grades and discipline, it all just comes together, and they kind of find their way on where they want to be. And it's not always where their buddies are going. In fact, Gabe does have two friends from Christian Brothers that are going to University of San Diego. Mm-hmm. But his best friend in the whole wide world, he's now at his second week at the University of Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a Jesuit graduate and a really good volleyball player. He's going to Alabama just to study. But he decided, I'm just going to go somewhere that's going to just be as cool and have as much fun as I can and watch as much college football. So he applied to Alabama, and his mom and dad took him there 2 weeks ago. And he's loved every moment of it. And I was talking to his mom the other day on the phone, and she said, I'm so proud of my son. He's called me every day. He finally did his laundry, and he went to church on Sunday.
Oh, good. That's great. You know, my son was on the my youngest son, who's the youngest kid. He was a sophomore last year, and even during COVID, I don't know how he got interested in volleyball, but he did, and he made the team, made the varsity, and their very first game was against Jesuit, and I thought they were playing the U.S. Olympic team.
Oh yeah, no, they were nationally ranked this year.
Oh yeah,
oh, they were good.
They were tremendous. And, you know, we got beat like 21-10, 21-9, 21-11. I went, hey, or 25. I said, you guys did pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, that's
that.
A lot of points to get. These guys were all about 6'4". I mean, they could spike, you know. And my son's not, hasn't grown enough to where he could get up and fight. He can set pretty good. But fell in love with volleyball. And I said, well, you know, just keep at it. It's not a sport I ever played or even paid much attention to. But same thing. Those guys are now, they're almost family. Everybody that played on that team, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, in a sport like volleyball, that's kind of a late bloomer sport because I don't think most kids play that at a young age.
No, they don't. You're right.
A lot of the girls in the Catholic schools do, but that's just one where if you're just determined to remain, you know, in an athletic environment, then that's another door that opens when maybe you didn't make the basketball team, but the door, you know, God opened the door for the volleyball team, and maybe that was what you're destined to do. But, you know, what's wild is that, you know, seeing all of Gabe's friends go away to different parts of the country and to move on to different things, you know, as a dad, I feel like I'm losing a little bit of a loss every time one of these kiddos go away, so I'm trying to figure out how to go onto social media and stay connected with them.
Oh, yeah, well, the great thing nowadays, though, is you can, you know, it's like, I mean, the Pac-12 network is showing tiddlywinks on Tuesday afternoons, you know, between Cal and Stanford, you know, and ESPN is showing all kinds of, you know, it's just amazing. And those are just a couple of them. There's so many networks now and so much exposure and a lot of live streaming, even at the Division II, Division III, you can, even a lot of the high schools are live streaming their events.
Oh, absolutely. And so there's all that exposure, and it puts these young athletes just in such a great position, you know, to succeed, you know, whether it be short-term or long-term, but it gives them this tremendous opportunity, and we're just so grateful to be able to see Gabriel in this position because he's worked hard in the midst of a lot of adversity, not just with COVID, but, you know, he's going away to school. I want to catch off guard here, Bob, but my wife, Sarah, was just diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in February.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And so I know that there's a lot that's weighing on this young man, but honestly, without his faith and his family all around him, you know, it would be very, and it's going to be very difficult for him to go away, but this is where God has put him in a position, and this is where mom and dad want him to be. But, you know, for those who've had a chance to listen to him on the radio, maybe they can say an extra prayer for him because he's got a lot on his shoulders. But that's the cross he's
going to
bear when we take him to school tomorrow.
Tomorrow, wow. Well, we definitely will be praying for him and praying for your wife, of course. And okay, so now I'm a professional baseball scout. Tell me about your son.
So So
don't be a dad. Be an analyst here.
I'll be an analyst. I'll take my dad hat off. But, okay. Well, first of all, 6'1", left-hander, 87 mile an hour fastball.
Wow.
Brings the slider down to about 81, 82. He could drop a 12-6 curveball on you with any count. And he's a high strikeout pitcher. And when he's not striking guys out, he's throwing ground balls and pop flies.
How's his control?
Really good. He's at about 78% strikes.
Wow.
And yeah, he's just a strike thrower. But I think the best gift that he brings to his game is he's very smart.
Mm-hmm.
He understands how to set a batter up, and he's thinking two or three pitches ahead of time. I've seen him go 3-0 intentionally on a number four hitter, and then strike him out with three straight curveballs.
Wow.
So you're sitting in the stands going, oh, my goodness, right? But he's got this little look on his face of confidence, and he just understands what his pitches are going to do, and he can find holes in people's swing. And every once in a while, they get the best of him, too. But he's just a real smart kid with a pretty high baseball acumen.
Wow. I remember I was watching a college baseball game last spring, and I forget who it was. It was in the Pac-12, and the bases were loaded, and the team that was ahead, they were ahead about 7-4, something like that. It was relatively close, and the league leading home run hitter comes up, bases loaded, and they intentionally walked him.
Yeah,
I don't think I had ever seen that before. Intentionally walk a run in, it's like. Wow.
Well, I think years ago, if I'm not mistaken, but Bobby Cox and the Braves, they walked Barry Bonds intentionally. It was bases loaded.
With bases, I bet that's true. I think the commentators mentioned that was the only other time they could think of.
Yeah, it's normally like, hey, you got nowhere to put him, you got to pitch to him. But I think if you look at just kind of the metrics of the games today, you might be better off walking a run in and worrying about the next guy.
That's exactly right. Well, Rick, God's blessings to you and your family, and prayers for Gabe, and of course for your wife and you, and all your kids. And it's just such a joy to talk with you. And hopefully our paths will cross again soon. And we'll be checking there with the University of San Diego.
Absolutely. And anytime I have an opportunity to talk to you about baseball and our Lord, I'll always take the time to do it. And I appreciate. Everything that you do in the Diocese of Sacramento. You're very important to the whole community. So thank you, Bob and Gabe, for doing what you do on Catholic Radio.
Well, thanks so much, Rick. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
All right, take care.
God bless. That's Rick Maya and his son Gabe, and, of course, prayers for his wife as she battles cancer. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
I feel burning deep inside of me. I feel your spirit. Thank you. statuette.